This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
One of the things that Ted Johnson always said, and Ted played for Belichick, obviously, for about 5 years, is that he thinks Belichick is really thirsty at some point to win a title without Tom Brady.
Right, to prove that he could.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Now, if you were to try to do it now, it would be with Jarrett Stidham as the quarterback, yeah, who they drafted in the fourth round, and they like him a lot. But that's a tough putt to step into Brady's shoes and go win a championship.
Well, and I think if you think back to when, you know, really, Belichick's best argument for how he could have been great without Tom Brady was really the first couple Super Bowls he won with Tom Brady. Tom Brady wasn't the same Tom Brady was a better quarterback later when they weren't winning Super Bowls than they were in those early Super Bowls. It was the fact that Tom Brady was good enough and they had an awesome defense. And they were just a great football team in a lot of respects early on. So I feel like he's already proven that side of it. And then the relationship grew and they became this incredible offense. But this right now, these Patriots with the defense that they had last year, this would be the most, this would potentially be the best environment to prove that you could do it without Tom Brady.
You think?
Because they have a really good defense. Right.
Yeah.
Now it would be a matter of, okay, if you have Jarrett Stidham and you've got $20 million extra cap space to work with,
yeah,
that they could go out and get some weaponry. That's kind of the...
Because the offensive weapons are not
right,
good.
And that's the chicken or the egg part, yeah, of this, though, too, is that, all right, if you lost Tom Brady, even though Tom Brady is underpaid, if you clear up $20 million of cap space, then all of a sudden, hey, look, we have a little extra, mm-hmm, offensive weaponry that Tom Brady could have used, but we couldn't use it then. So maybe Belichick is thinking that.
Would the Patriots, without Tom Brady, still be the favorite in the AFC East? Or would it be the Buffalo Bills?
Without Tom Brady?
Without
I think it would
Tom
become
Brady.
The Buffalo Bills.
They'd
at that
become
point.
The favorite?
Yeah, because he'd also have a young quarterback going against that Bills defense.
Yeah.
So I would say the Buffalo Bills.
And the Bills
the
played the Patriots hard with Tom Brady.
And they're going to have the same schedule. You know, this year, both those teams had easy, quote-unquote, easy schedules.
Yeah.
But they'll both have similar schedules next year. So you're up to, yeah, I'd have to give it to the Bills.
Telling you who's rooting for this right now should be the Houston Texans. They play the Patriots this year because, mm-hmm, of the first-place schedule. So
yeah, and look at how good they did versus young quarterbacks, especially like, they say, the Broncos. Yeah.
That's not going to happen on Anthony Weaver's watch, my friend.
Ah, good call.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, look, I'm excited about Anthony Weaver, but he needs better defense.
He needs better
and
players.
And he needs a pass rusher.
Yeah. They need better players.
I'm like, look, you could bring Monet in here, and if I give him some Play-Doh and like one color of watercolor, he's not going to create a brilliant work of art.
No, Monet was pretty badass.
I'll take your word for it.
I don't know.
Which one was he?
I don't know. Monet, Manet.
Is he still alive?
Tippy-tippy-day-day.
Yeah.
I came up with, let's pretend for a second that Brady doesn't want to go back to New England. I have 7 possibilities for Tom Brady. I want to bounce these off of you and see what you think of these. I'm guessing that Tom Brady is going to be looking at teams based on 3 things, and probably in this order. A, chance to win a Super Bowl. B, the quality of the head coach. C, the quality of the offensive talent around him. I would think if I were a quarterback, that would be my criteria, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those 3 things. All right, so I think there's 3 places that are great fits for Tom Brady. Los Angeles Chargers, who appear to be ready to move on from Phillip Rivers.
Right, well, and Phillip Rivers has...
He's moved his entire family, him, his wife, and his 50 kids have moved to Florida.
Right. Where in Florida?
I don't know.
I want to say, because I saw somebody showing the commute time from, I want to say it's Destin or something.
Okay.
Like around there to Tampa.
Okay.
So if Phillip Rivers ends up in Tampa, is he going to do the commuting thing like he did from San Diego?
Did he keep the QB film mobile?
Yeah, I know. That's what he is.
Like, yeah.
They probably drove through Houston if they did.
Right down I-10.
If he piled in the whole his whole Puritan tribe and they rolled right through I-10.
What is he up to now? 9 kids? Is it 9 kids that he has now?
It sounds right.
10 kids?
It's
a lot of kids.
I know whatever the number is, it sounds like it's way too many, and then you see it and they're like, oh, that's actually it.
Yeah. So I don't think Rivers is back in L.A., otherwise he wouldn't have moved to Florida. So that's still a roster that you can win with, though, I think, right? I mean, they've got some players on defense. They've got some weapons on offense. Their offensive line's not great. But you know, there's not going to be a perfect place for Brady to go.
Right.
By definition, these teams are going to be flawed because they're looking for quarterbacks.
I mean, at that point, you've got, look, Ken Wisenhunt's the offensive coordinator there, I believe.
So, is he still?
Yeah. Well, maybe if you make a change. I don't know. Does Brady bring his own personal offensive coordinator with him? Does Josh McDaniels get the job or something?
My guess is any of these teams are gonna give Brady a lot of say-so over what does and doesn't happen.
So if he goes, so right now where he's got Julian Edelman and not a whole lot else, he would have Hunter Henry, which if Hunter Henry can stay healthy.
Free agent.
Oh, he is.
Free agent Hunter Henry.
So maybe he has Hunter Henry.
Maybe.
Maybe that's part of the deal is like, you got to give me Hunter Henry.
That's right.
We got to have him. And then Keenan Allen, of course, and Mike Williams. Is that juicy enough to take him out to be closer to his one set of children still lives out there, right?
His oldest kid son. With Bridget Moynihan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, well,
he
in
lives
California.
In LA, I think.
Yeah, is
yeah.
it in LA?
He'd be out there kissing him on the mouth all day long.
Well, how much do you factor
he kisses his kids on the mouth.
He does.
Like, but for extended, weird, long periods. It's not like a little peck. He gives long kisses to his kids on the mouth. It's
yeah,
weird.
Yeah,
it's
somewhere
really
between
weird.
A peck and a makeout. It's strange. How much do you think something like that matters to Brady, though? Like, the L.A. would seem to appeal. Look, he's got a famous wife.
Yeah.
You know, like, how much do you think that part of the geography is
involved? You think Giselle
involved?
Is cool with Bridget? You think they're cool enough? You think they'll get modern,
do they get along?
A modern split family relationship
I'm
where everybody's
say they
cool
get
with each other?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you never know. You never know, though.
We'll see.
Maybe Giselle's not, maybe she doesn't dig that.
So do you think the Chargers are a good fit?
I don't know. I don't think anybody's a good fit.
But
maybe, I guess, okay. But no.
Okay. Well, let's keep going, and we'll see if these are all no's. Chicago.
No.
Not Chicago.
No.
None of these are going to be perfect.
All right. What's the argument for Chicago?
Chicago's got a ready-made defense to win a Super Bowl.
Okay. He already has that. So I guess what I'm asking is, how is it a better fit than New England?
Well, that's
because so does New England.
No, I get it. I said at the outset that we're assuming he's not going back to New England.
All right.
If he doesn't go back to New England, these are the options.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so versus retirement. Okay.
Versus,
I would say,
yeah.
Oh, if his only choice was to go to the Chargers, I would say no, he should retire.
Okay. Chicago.
I would say no, he should retire. Oh, let's see. Bill Lazor, my old teammate from Cornell University, is the new offensive coordinator for Chicago.
Okay.
Bill Lazor will go. I'll call up Tom. I'm going to call Bill and be like, Bill, just give me Tom's number. I'll talk him into it. And I'll take Tom out for mimosas, and I'll convince him of the greatness of Bill Lazor.
Do you think a Chicago team with Tom Brady, a quarterback, competes to get to a Super Bowl?
I think he would look. Okay, so he's going to look at
Trubisky was the problem there.
He's going to look at Allen Robinson, and that's going to intrigue him. He's going to look at the tight end group, and there's not necessarily a whole lot to get excited about that. They've got Taylor Gabriel, and I don't. But the defense, it's not that defense was not the same as it was when that they were 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say no, you should retire.
Okay, Indianapolis.
Let's see. Defense is promising. You're going to be playing inside. Does this? Oh, that would be the other thing I'd say. Look, I know he's played.
Screw the cold weather?
Well, no. Well, not screw the cold weather. I know he's played well in the cold, and he's succeeded in the cold his whole career. But if we, from Brett Favre on down, these old guys just seem to shrink a little bit when it starts getting cold out because their physical inadequacies are amplified. So he'd be playing inside.
Shrinkage.
He'd have T.Y. Hilton. Not that his deep ball, like Brady never had a great deep ball, but it's as he gets older also, but T.Y. Hilton, I think, turns a lot of guys' arms into something better. But other than T.Y. Hilton, who was kind of up and down this year too, I'm not feeling it.
Let me inject a variable into this when it comes to the Colts. They have a bleep ton of cap space.
Yeah.
What if Brady were to say, I'll come there, and then let's go cherry pick some free agents that we can go get? Now, the main thing is, does the owner have the cash flow to be able to handle it? That's always been the talk in Indianapolis, is that this owner doesn't spend big bucks on free agents because he's got a budget that he works on from a cash flow standpoint. But let's pretend for a second that
he has. I mean, he's had splurges before.
He has.
A few years ago, he got a ton of dudes.
He has, but he has cap space every year. In the last couple of years, he hasn't used it. But let's pretend that the part of Brady's contingency of going there was, and let's spend some of this $100 million you have in cap space on that guy, and this guy over here.
Right. Then he's still going to not have – what we've seen with Brady before is when he's not on the same page with everybody, and what they do in New England is a whole ton of option routes. Guys have to know how to run three different routes every single time based on what the defense is. And when those guys aren't on the same page as Tom Brady, it looks really, really ugly. I'm glad we're doing this exercise because it really comes down to the more I see it, and these are probably the best options we put out there. If it's not New England, it's retire. Okay. I think he should. I would predict. I don't think it's going on a limb. I don't think it's going to go well for him if he goes somewhere else.
Let's just bounce a few more of these. These are longer shots.
Okay.
So you'll probably shoot these down quicker, which is fine. He was spotted talking to Mark Davis, I think at the UFC fight over the weekend, Brady was.
Yeah.
The owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. Brady in Vegas.
I think that Brady might...
With Gruden.
Brady might hire a Brazilian hitman to take out John Gruden by week four.
That would seem to be retired.
I think John Gruden, 3 weeks into training camp, would start to realize what Brady's physical limitations are, mm-hmm. and he would start talking smack about him behind his back. It would just... it would not go well at all. Gruden always says he wants a veteran quarterback, then he gets a veteran quarterback, and he's like, oh, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
Rich Gannon. Oh, this guy's a bum. And then it is next stop. Oh, I wish I had Rich Gannon.
Right.
Boy, oh boy. Oh boy, wasn't he the best. Yeah.
So you say no to Las Vegas, it sounds like. Tampa Bay. Bruce Arians.
Bruce Arians. I wonder if Bruce Arians loves to air it out and would Tom Brady
a lot of weapons in Tampa.
I know, that's what I'm thinking about. Now you're talking something that would be genuinely enticing.
And it's already seven there. Games with Jameis Winston.
And it's with a genuinely very bright and almost a complete opposite personality type of Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'm glad we're doing this exercise because I'm going to say he should consider the Tampa
should
Bay
consider.
Buccaneers.
So this is the first one we've done.
He should 100% consider the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay. So
because I think Arians would love the challenge. Arians is at a point in his career where he has two potential challenges right now. It's Jameis Winston, and is Jameis Winston the kind of challenge that he really wants? I think he likes the idea of the challenge of turning him around, but he also knows that Jameis Winston has a wild streak in him that he might never be tamed.
Yeah.
You know, he's like Brad Pitt's character in what's the movie where he goes to World War One and then he comes back and then is his name Tristan or something? He comes back. He's like a rock that you break yourself against, is what the old Indian guy calls him. Yeah.
Pitt's IMDb. I was about to say Thelma and Louise.
Oh, what is that movie? They're out in the frontier, and his brothers and him all go to war. The one dies, and he goes back. And
someone will text it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Jameis Winston is like.
He's
to
that guy. Arians. All right.
But yeah, no. Chris Godwin and all those guys. Yeah, I like that. I like Tampa.
Okay. Last two. Dallas.
No, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
That's weird. Why would that happen?
Okay. If you look at the rundown, it's under long shot.
Is somebody putting that? Okay, yeah, no.
I put it under long shot. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, no.
Dallas, just because it's Jerry Jones. You think Jerry Jones wouldn't like to have Tom Brady playing for him, just in terms of the buzz?
Not at the expense of Dak Prescott.
I don't know. That's why it's a long shot. I'm just throwing it out there.
Dak Prescott had a really good year this year. The Cowboys are one of the strangest teams in the history of football. Dak Prescott, if they were actually on a good team, could have been in MVP conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's why it's under long shot.
Yeah.
The other long shot, although I don't know if this is as long of a shot nearly as Dallas would be, Tennessee, where his former teammate is the head coach, Mike Vrabel. Would you rather have a couple years of Tom Brady or a couple years of Ryan Tannehill?
Well, Ryan Tannehill is going to do whatever the hell they tell him to. They could franchise tag Ryan Tannehill. Would Mike Vrabel...
Well, if you sign Tom Brady, Tannehill walks.
Yeah.
You know, it's either Brady or Tannehill.
Why, though? What's Tannehill done to earn it?
I don't know.
I'll just go ahead and franchise tag him.
Because someone's going to... So you're going to pay Tannehill $23 million to back up Tom Brady?
Yep, because Tannehill will be there 2 years from now. Yeah.
When he's 34?
And that's what I would say to Tannehill. I was like, look, we're going to keep you under wraps. Or look, sign a two-year deal.
If I'm Tannehill and they offer me the franchise tag, I'd sign it to go clean toilets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I advocate, just like the Eagles a few years ago, who'd spent more money on the quarterback position than any team in history.
Yeah.
Things happen. You franchise tag. Hey, look, Brady starts out fine for the first three games. Then all of a sudden, somebody needs to trade for Ryan Tannehill because they want to rekindle the magic of what he had last year. And you get a first rounder for Ryan Tannehill. Look at that Sam Bradford saga.
Yeah.
Sam Bradford is your argument for franchise tagging a backup quarterback.
Yeah. So basically, I can't believe we've arrived at a place where the best place for Tom Brady to go is Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa Bay is where he should go.
That's your path to glory.
Sorry, Philip Rivers.
Yeah.
Brady's taking your new job.
And it's several hours closer to Brazil.
It is true. Yep. Yeah, you can probably get there easy.
Probably got Portuguese teachers for your kids and everything.
I was about to say, they probably have nonstops flying to Brazil. And then I'm like, Brady has nonstops everywhere.
Yeah,
he probably has six jets. Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610.
We're talking about one of the promos has Lopez saying that Chris Olsen is one of the best in the business at managing the cap and whatnot and getting everything. I don't. I'm gonna ask Lopez about that because I might be the one person in this town that really wasn't worried at all when Bill O'Brien fired Chris Olsen. Or excuse me, when the committee fired Chris Olsen.
Right.
The curious thing about it to me is that Bill O'Brien just insists that he's not the guy calling the shots, and that's what's weird about it is that all these people get fired, and Bill O'Brien is trying to act like he's in like a game of Clue where he was never near the murder weapon. He never even held the candlestick in his hands. Like, all right, buddy, just whatever. But as far as firing Chris Olsen, that's just what you do. If you're a GM that takes over in July, maybe you've got an idea for somebody else you'd like to hire, or maybe you don't like the way the current guy is doing it for some reason, so you're going to change it at some point, but you can't do it in July. You got all these other contracts to worry about, and you just do it when the time comes along. So it's that doesn't mean that I'm absolutely okay with this flat GM committee or anything. It's just that this move didn't register in my brain, and I don't think it would at most cities. Most cities, if somebody says, oh, the contract negotiator was let go, you would say, oh, okay, I guess they're going to hire somebody new. Like, no, hardly anybody ever even knows the name. Here, when somebody go ahead and tell me, because I know the guy because I had worked with him, who the Texans' first contract negotiator was in the first, in the Dom Capers years. Yeah, in the Charlie Casser years.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Right.
It was Dan Ferentz. I think he retired from football and went and, opened a Supercuts or something.
Nice.
It's not a generally well-known thing.
My reaction to it when it came down, I retweeted I apologize for whoever tweeted it first, if it was Berman or McClain, whoever I saw tweet on my Twitter timeline, I retweeted it. Tell me if my reaction was an acceptable reaction. Okay, here I'm going to paraphrase what I tweeted because I don't have it in front of me. I basically said, Seth, that I don't know what goes into a decision like firing the senior VP of football administration, but I will say that one area of the Texans that seems to have operated very, very well over the last few years has been their management of the salary cap and the team friendliness of their contracts.
Right, right. But the thing is, a lot of
not saying he's irreplaceable. I'm not saying, but it is an area that's been running well.
The person that's genuinely in charge of that is the general manager, and he works with his cap expert and the contract negotiator and all that. So it's a valuable part of your team, and it's an important one. But it's not like that's generally the driving force behind your long term. You could be the best contract negotiator in the world, but if your GM decides, hey, we're going after three big-time free agents this offseason, you know what's going to happen? Your cap is going to suck.
Right.
Likewise, if your GM says, all right, well, you know what? We need to get this cap under control. This is what I want you to do. Then you go out and do it. It's kind of like you're a really good sniper working for a really good general, ideally.
Yeah.
That you're not... Or I guess you're a colonel. I don't know. I'm going to botch the military analogies.
Right.
But you've got one specific duty that you're good at. That doesn't mean you're running, you're waging the whole campaign.
Yeah, yeah. So you're basically saying when Lopez gets in here, he's the one doing the toss. And if you're listening, John, you better be ready to explain what you're saying in that promo.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Just okay. I don't understand necessarily why so many people are emotionally attached to Chris Olsen.
I've met him before. I really like Chris. He's a good guy.
It's interesting when you look at various pictures of him. I feel like he went through a transformation at some point. There's some pictures where he looks kind of like a doughy office guy, like with like an old like a 1980s haircut.
I've met a smaller version of him.
But then there's other pictures where he looks like he's lost some weight and his hair's like all wavy and magnificent.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope that's the current version of him.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what. Maybe O'Brien got jealous. Maybe O'Brien didn't like you. Maybe he got
because
too dashing.
He's so damn handsome.
He's like, hey, you've gotten a little too dashing for
you. You know
your
what I need, Easterby?
Chris Olsen.
Fewer lookers. I need fewer
Maybe
handsome
if you shaved
people.
Your head like Easterby, we'd keep you around. But right now, you're too damn attractive.
Imagine that's what you have to do to keep your job. Is shave your head. Ryan and Easterby, two baldies. All right. So, Seth, we're still 2 weeks away from the Super Bowl. So there will be plenty of time to break down this game. There are already some things developing here, though, early on, 12, 13 days away. What is it, 12 days away from the Super Bowl that are bothering me about this Super Bowl? Three things specifically. The first is that, and if we have to put up with this for the next 2 weeks, then I may need to check out. There seems to be this thing where everybody is picking apart the greatness of Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
This debate that, is Patrick Mahomes truly great? Is he the best quarterback in the league or one of them? Or is he a product of having all of these weapons around him? It's got to be one or the other. I heard some audio from Stephen A. And maybe this is me just picking out something I heard from Stephen A. Smith
right.
and applying it to a much bigger portion of the media than it actually applies to. But when I hear people like making Patrick Mahomes sound like he's some sort of souped up system quarterback, mm-hmm. that bothers me.
Well, and this started before the season because there were, one of the stats that was floating around out there was the average separation of his receivers, like the average separation that the intended receiver had gotten from his defender, and it was the largest in the league. I think that it's unfair to use that against Pat Mahomes because Pat Mahomes is part of the reason that those receivers get that separation.
Explain that.
Well, for one, okay, yes, he does have very fast receivers that do tend to get separation. Yeah. But part of it is that Mahomes, and this is what occurred to me this weekend, and I really have over the course of the season, what I've started to watch for is I think there are some quarterbacks that genuinely and truly and 100% commit themselves to giving a damn about the run game mm-hmm. and about the play action and how it complements the passing game. They become true and genuine, complete captains of the ship. And I think Pat Mahomes is there. I think Pat Mahomes is one of those quarterbacks that fools the television camera a couple times a game. He fools your eyeballs. I got faked out on, I think it was the play that he cared. He does a great job of actually faking it and looking like he does not have the ball.
Yeah,
he's
really
running.
Good at that.
Like usually,
Deshaun needs to get better at
that.
You
think like a lot of times when quarterbacks make it look like they have the ball, but they don't, that's a good fake. Mahomes is actually really good at making the fake handoff look so good that you genuinely don't think he has the ball like three steps away from it. He's really good at it. That lends to better play action and it lends to guys with more separation. I think the fact that he is such a deep threat also creates opportunities underneath where guys have a lot of separation because he's loosened up the safeties a little bit. Everything is so it's a chicken and the egg type thing where yes, he has very, very fast receivers. But you're gonna tell me, look at Travis Kelce and some of the times he was wide open in that game. That's not because guys weren't fast enough. You know? It was because the offense got them there. I try real hard these days never to say, well, what would he be without that coach? Or what would this coach be without that quarterback? And the analogy I would use is, do you ever look at a marriage and say, well, yeah, they've got an awesome marriage, but it's all because of the wife? Or like, oh, yeah, they've got an awesome marriage, but it's all because of the husband. Like, no, that's a relationship that requires two people that are really committed to each other and are really doing a great job in that marriage. Mm-hmm. It's not a direct analogy, obviously, but I think coaching and a quarterback are somewhat similar in that it's almost immaterial who's more responsible for it when it's a great one mm-hmm. because it doesn't get to be a great one. Like, you don't get to have a great marriage unless you got two people that are pretty good at marriage, you know, that love each other. I don't think you get to be a great offense, a genuinely great offense, unless you have both a great coordinator and a great quarterback. So I think both those guys are. And there's no way. There are a lot of quarterbacks that would have success in Andy Reid's system, but not to the same level as this kid that's got such a freakishly talented arm.
Yeah.
Unlike, like, one that we've really even seen in the past decade. He's, like, all the better parts of Jay Cutler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you take Jay Cutler's arm, but that add on to it, judgment, being a good teammate, maybe actually genuinely caring about football, all these things.
Right.
Yeah.
My second thing that is going to annoy me for the next couple weeks, Tyrann Mathieu's Twitter account.
Well, you don't have to go to it.
Well,
you can't help it, can you?
That is, yeah.
You're like a liberal person that can't stop listening to Rush Limbaugh or somebody. Yeah. I don't know. I feel awful about myself. There's probably conservatives that like have to go check out and see what Bill Maher said.
Yeah.
You just can't help it. Like,
boy,
you want to be angry, don't you?
I can just unfollow him, can I?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Or mute him or do anything.
There's any number of things I can do.
You don't. But this is what Twitter is really good. Part of their algorithm is they figure out what angers you. And they know that that's addictive, that you're addictive. People, we as humans have some weird infatuation with being angry.
Yeah.
To where something might enrage you and you have no respect for that person. And yet you continue to go back to it over and over
again.
So are
you telling me that I actually love Tyrann Mathieu's Twitter account?
You don't love it. You feel compelled and drawn to it in a weird way.
It makes me, it makes me feel some kind of way.
You're like a teenage girl who likes the bad boy and can't help it. You say that you want a nice guy.
Yeah.
You say that you want the A student that's going to treat you right, but you continually drawn back to the bad boy.
I feel like you're just taking up for Tyrann Mathieu because he laid off at Deshaun at the end of that game.
He did.
You like that. If people don't know, Tyrann Mathieu had a free run at Deshaun Watson when the score was out of hand.
Yeah.
And he held up on his, dude. Yeah.
And he said something afterwards about how he loved him or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to enjoy, I think Tyrann, I feel bad for Tyrann because I think he, like a lot of people on social media, they want to believe that they're actually just playing and it's all just a game to them. That, oh, look, I don't take this too serious. That's all theater. I'm the one that's in control here. And it's all a lie. Deep down, it's bothering them. But for whatever reason, you know, one of the biggest lies people tell these days is like, oh, it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, it is. It is. It's bothering you. Get off of it. Go enjoy this great life that you've created for yourself.
The third thing I hate about the Super Bowl is that Seth Payne has made me face my hypocrisy of Tyrann Mathieu. That's the third thing. The fourth thing, I added that to the list in the last 45 seconds. The very last thing is that we're going to hear for the next 2 weeks. You know, Kyle Shanahan used to be an assistant for the Texans.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, like it's 10 years ago.
Right, and that's...
What do you want to do, put him in a cage in the basement somewhere and leave him until you fire the head coach that you want to replace?
That one doesn't really do it for me because it's not like he was a head coaching candidate at that moment. He was a young guy.
Yeah, don't tell that to the text page.
Right, right.
Or Twitter.
Well, I mean, that's... You could make that case that, okay, hey, maybe if you hadn't fired Gary Kubiak, and plus, please, if you can bring up the points that you were making in 2013 about how Gary Kubiak needed to keep his job, then I'll listen to you.
But he left before that. He went to Washington with his old man.
But if Kubiak had stuck around, then he comes back. Shanahan might have come back.
Yeah.
And I think the Mike Vrabel being the head coach of the Titans and making a championship game is the one that actually has more resonance there because you saw him. He was a head coaching candidate. You could have conceivably fired Bill O'Brien and elevated...
I would argue Shanahan more because of Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
Because you feel like Shanahan would be able to better utilize Deshaun.
Well, one thing we know about Vrabel, because Vrabel did it. Vrabel's area of expertise is the defense. He hired a really good defensive coordinator.
That's true.
I think Vrabel definitely would have hired an offensive coordinator better than, well, frankly, Bill O'Brien,
who essentially hired himself.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tim Kelly. We live in a golden age of content. In this world, this has nothing to do with Houston. This has nothing to do with your golden age of Houston sports. We live in a golden age of content between movies, TV, streaming, documentaries, mostly TV related and streaming related.
There's too much good stuff out there. Frankly, it's
way too much.
Bit of a conundrum we're in here.
Yes.
The biggest first world problem there is right now is I've got too many people telling me about different shows that I need to watch.
You know what I need?
And I trust that they actually all are good.
I do too. You know what I need? An app. We talked about that app that recognizes people's faces and gives you their contact info. I need an app that turns 24 hours into like 40 hours. I need an app that expands the day. Yeah, for watching stuff.
You know what? You should take a sabbatical. You should take a sabbatical for 6 months.
That's good for a radio
career.
What are
you going to do? Are you going to go, you're going to work on like finishing your archaeology PhD? Nope. I'm going to catch up on The Office.
And it's going to make me a better host when I come back.
Yeah, I know. That is the great thing. Although I have a talent for procrastination when it comes to dutiful things, like things that I have to do for duty.
Right.
I actually, honestly, right this moment, I'm working my way through The Office. Because
that
I never,
floors me, that
I
you
never
didn't watch
got
it in
into
the first
it, and
run.
People have always been shocked that I didn't like it. For whatever reason, maybe I just cut a couple off episodes. I'm enjoying it, and I really like it a lot. I just got to the episode where Dwight Schrute runs into a pole and then vomits all over his car and then acts weirdly the rest of the day.
Yeah.
It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And yet, I'm doing it partly because for my job, I need to be able to reference pop culture things and everything. Right. And I know there are a lot of jokes about The Office that I don't get. So now that I'm doing it, and I know in the back of my mind I'm actually kind of doing it for my job, I sit down and I'm like, gotta watch The Office now.
So it's actually put a negative tinge on
it. Yes, because it feels like work. And I'm like, I got to sit down and do this thing that I'm actually going to enjoy anyway and would be doing.
It'd be great if you cursed out our boss for making you watch The Office.
Yeah.
What's wrong, Seth? I'm watching The Office. Why? It's going to be good for the show.
I'm interviewing somewhere 5 years from now. Why did you leave your last place of employment? My boss wanted me to watch The Office.
He's
a monster.
The worst. By the way, Legends of the Fall was the Brad Pitt movie that you were struggling for.
Right. A lot of people thought it was
A
lot of people thought it was A River Runs Through It, which is interesting because Brad Pitt played kind of the same type of character, both set back in the day, back in the West and everything. But I was thinking of Legends of the Fall, where Tristan is the rock that people break themselves against.
I was thinking of Moneyball. So the reason I bring up this...
Brad Pitt in Moneyball? Oh, yeah,
Billy Bean.
Sorry, no, when you said Moneyball, I thought of Rounders for some reason.
Gotcha.
I was like, that's Matt Damon, you moron.
Great movie, by the way. The reason I bring up this content age we live in is because we get things like the Aaron Hernandez documentary on Netflix, which I was very much looking forward to after I saw the trailer for it. And to me, it lived up to the hype. And you just watched it yesterday. It's getting the area where it's getting criticism, Seth, is that people think that it paints Aaron Hernandez in too sympathetic a light. I don't choose to look at it that way. I feel like it just gives you more of kind of the inside of what was going on in the mind of a guy who was a really, really terrible human being.
You know what I think, honestly, there? If people feel that or believe that, I think in some respects, because I think the documentary actually makes a couple of very transparent, almost pleas to the listener, or they acknowledge, like, look, there's a tendency in these cases to focus more on the perpetrator instead of the victim. I think the documentary in each of the three episodes actually kind of addresses that point, and they really go out of their way to paint Odin Lloyd as an actual person.
Mm-hmm.
They have his one friend on, who I don't quite 100% trust, but is...
You're talking about the dude with the long hair?
Yeah,
who played football with him? Who made it seem like their semi-pro league was like the NFL light?
That somehow you get a whole lot of cred in that neighborhood because you're on the semi-pro team. I'm not quite 100% buying that.
I love that.
Yeah. But I feel like... I think that in any ways, if people are saying that, I feel like maybe it's because they themselves felt a little bit of sympathy for Aaron Hernandez. But that's what happens. I mean, when you dig into Andy's story, and I think what I found in this, I was expecting Aaron Hernandez to come off like a complete sociopath, like a guy that didn't care about what other people thought of him and was very diabolical, when in fact it was not the exact opposite. He wasn't a sociopath. He was deeply insecure. And he had some serious social adjustment issues. He had a rough go of it when he was a teenager for a lot of different reasons. So I felt some measure of sympathy for him, but I think that's okay to do as a human. Like, that's what happens when you get to know people. It doesn't excuse anything by a long shot. Lots of people have had rough circumstances that obviously don't go on to murder people. But I understand why some people might feel that way.
So I actually did a winners and losers for this for the Houston Press.
Okay.
So I'll bring this on the air, and I will say this. It is nearly impossible to find human beings in this thing that are winners.
Yeah,
like everybody in this thing. There's nobody you come away feeling good about.
You know who's a winner in this? Whoever put together the social profile, the psychological traits profile for Aaron Hernandez in the scouting process. They showed this. They showed this chart where Aaron Hernandez was scored very, very high on all these things like coachability, all these other things, but then was down at like number one or number two
out of 10
on social maturity.
Yeah.
Right. Social maturity was the one category where, out of college that he scored very low on.
It was one out of 10.
And when I can see where the Patriots looked at this and thought, well, gosh, look at all these other things. Like, there's good in this kid. The kid's got, like, he cares about football, all this stuff. We just got to grow him up some because he was 20 years old when he got drafted. Right. He was extremely young.
Yep.
But that's profile actually ended up being pretty accurate.
It did end up being pretty accurate, which brings me to a few of the winners. Most of them are inanimate objects, like the Harry Potter books, which I think speaks to his maturity level in some ways.
That was the one thing he wanted in prison. They only brought around the books at the library in the prison weren't up to what he wanted, so he had his mom bring him Harry Potter books.
Yeah, she's like, so what kind of books do you want? And he's like, Harry Potter's?
I know those are long books, and I know there's several of them, but it seems like if you were locked up 24/7 and in your cell in solitary. He not in solitary, but he was in his own. He didn't have a cellmate or anything.
Yeah.
You might want to expand your horizons a little
bit. Maybe. I'd be afraid of the Dementors flying around. Yeah. Blue Cotton Candy Bubblicious, winner.
That's right.
Never has it gotten more publicity than in the Aaron Hernandez documentary. If you're wondering what I'm talking about, he went the night he killed Odin Lloyd. They show him on security cam going to a convenience store buying Blue Cotton Candy Bubblicious, which wound up being a piece of evidence because there was a chewed up piece of it in which a bullet casing in the rental car was stuck in it when he returned the he returned the rental car with bullet shells in the rental car encased in chewed up blue Bubblicious gum.
It was not a well thought out plan.
He's not a good murderer.
Yeah. I would say one of the other winners here that we already knew about, but just when I saw the fake eyeball that this guy has, Alexander Bradley.
He's the only person.
He was a drug dealer that Aaron Hernandez had shot in the face. And then several days later, Aaron Hernandez was quite surprised to hear Alexander Bradley's voice on the phone.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah. Hernandez thought he was dead.
Yeah.
You know, the funniest part of this documentary, and I know it's not meant to be funny, but somebody with a straight face said, you know, where I think where things really started to unravel for him were after he shot Alexander Bradley in the face. And I'm like, well, I could make the argument that maybe they'd started to unravel a little bit earlier than that. What the hell are you talking about? Like, he was on this drugged out binge.
Right.
He shot Alexander Bradley in the face. Like, after that, things really started to unravel.
Like, the dude drove straight from Bible study to go shoot the guy in the face.
But now, the point was that Alexander Bradley was this drug dealer who now wanted to kill Aaron Hernandez.
Right.
And that's when he really started to, he started hanging out with his couple buddies from Bristol that were really tough dudes. He was paranoid all the time. That's when he probably got really paranoid about Odin Lloyd. Having said all that, he had already at this point killed those two guys in, well, oh no, allegedly killed the two guys at the nightclub.
That's what
he eventually found out.
That's what he was worried about. It's hard to keep track of all of the people that Aaron Hernandez allegedly shot.
Right.
But as we know, there were two people that were shot that eventually he was charged with but exonerated for in 2012, that Alexander Bradley was in the car with him that night. And then so in February, I think he was worried that Bradley was going to rat him out. February of 2013, he was worried he's going to rat him out. He shoots him in the face, Bradley.
Yeah.
And then Bradley turns out that he's alive and well.
Yeah.
And then that's when, and this is where we get into some of the losers, that's when Hernandez goes to the Patriots and tells them, look, I'm afraid my family might be in trouble and be in danger. And it's because he was afraid that Alexander Bradley and his group of henchmen might put a hit out on him.
Street toughs.
Yeah. Might put a hit out on him. So he asked for a trade from the Patriots. The Patriots' response was basically to tell him to go shut up and play football, and we're going to get you a flop house.
Right.
They have a realtor kind of on the payroll and a guy on the staff that works with the realtor for situations like this, and they found Aaron Hernandez this crappy apartment in a bad part of the Boston area, so he could go there while his family is sitting out there open season in North Attleboro in the house.
Well, and that was a
little
bit confusing.
That was the solution the Patriots had.
The only problem, because I felt like there were a couple times where the documentary took shots at the Patriots organization but didn't really flesh it out much. I'm not convinced that Aaron Hernandez told the Patriots the whole truth about why he needed that apartment. And I'm wondering if it was more along the lines of, hey, I've got family issues or something, and I need to be able to, maybe like, I don't trust my temper, something like that, and that's why I need a separate residence. I don't get the sense that he told the Patriots the whole story, and that's why Robert Kraft was so shocked when all of this happened.
That's true.
So I'll give the Patriots a little bit of a pass there.
Okay, what about the Patriot fans that stood outside the court wearing Hernandez jerseys, holding up signs saying, "We support you,
well,
Aaron"?
And they also, I didn't realize this at the time, that because remember that iconic shot of him being led from his mansion where he had his hands behind his back, but he had a T-shirt over?
Yeah.
So his hands were behind his back underneath the T-shirt.
Right.
That became called Hernandezing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were putting photos around doing that. I don't remember that part.
I don't either.
That was a big thing in Boston for a little while.
I guess so.
Or then when he walked into his second trial for the nightclub murders.
Yeah.
And one of the jurors gasped, "He's so handsome."
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Winners. Hernandez's looks.
I'd say one real quick a winner that was kind of weird, and I still don't quite get it. Jermaine Wiggins, the tight end. He was all over this documentary. It's not clear that he even really knew Aaron Hernandez much at all, right?
I think he's from Connecticut,
So he was kind of fleshing out like the whole Connecticut side, Patriots side and everything.
Yeah.
Honestly, there was a little too much Jermaine Wiggins in this for not having any actual firsthand stories about Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong. I'm looking, it says he's from East, he attended East Boston High.
I know he's on the Patriots, Jonesy, but I'm saying like he's not telling a whole lot of stories about exactly what he was.
He was on the Patriots for 2 years. Yeah, that was a little strange. Yeah. Other losers in this thing.
No, Jonesy, what I'm saying is I understand why he was on there. They featured him heavily to where it almost became like one of these things where you're watching like these NFL documentaries and John McClane's all over it, explaining something that happened to the Oilers back in the day.
Right.
It felt almost like, all right, why is this guy just sitting here as a media personality?
Well, I knew this to not be the case because I follow football, but I could see where you were just an average person watching it.
Yeah.
You could have conflated things to where you would have thought Jermaine Wiggins was on the team while Hernandez was there.
So anyway, I was going to say a big win for him because he's all over this thing. His name is out there. Like his Q rating went up from a bit.
Probably did. He's very likable on there. Aaron Hernandez's mom, not a good person.
One of the great...
Terry Hernandez,
who... All right, let's start. There's two big things. One was when Aaron Hernandez's father died while he was in high school, within a couple months, his mom moved in with the husband of Aaron's favorite
cousin,
who also had cancer, by the way.
Right.
So Aaron's... And
she had been cheating with that guy while Hernandez's dad was alive.
And while I say moved in, what I mean to say is that he moved in with Aaron Hernandez.
Right.
Aaron went on to go spend a whole lot of time at his favorite cousin's house.
Oh, and by the way, this guy was also a criminal. He's another bad person.
The other was the audio of where Aaron Hernandez is in jail talking to his mom, and his mom at one point says, "I told you, Aaron, all you had to do was give me $1 million and I'd have been fine for the rest of my life."
She's a terrible human being.
What the hell are you talking about, lady?
Yeah,
that's all you had to do was give me $1 million.
She's awful, man. She is terrible. The worst thing, I guess my big takeaway from the documentary is the absolute worst thing that happened to Aaron Hernandez, just in terms of things that could have maybe sent his path differently, was getting drafted by the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
He just had way too much proximity to all of these horrible, horrible human beings. He himself is a bad human being. I'm not sticking up for him. But my observation from this thing is I would have been interested to see if we could go back in time, you know, do the Superman reverse the Earth thing and have him get drafted by... And they said this in the documentary. Have him get drafted by San Diego.
Yeah.
Have him get drafted by Seattle. Have him get drafted by some team where it is an expensive flight for some of these idiots to even have any sort of access to him.
I understand that, but now, because I'll say one of the losers in this is Urban Meyer, because Urban Meyer... is in this documentary, they're documenting the time that Aaron Hernandez punched a bar manager because the bar manager wanted Aaron Hernandez to play the bill. The documentary didn't really do a good job of explaining the other situation that came up while he was in Gainesville, which is somebody got shot outside of a bar yet again. Aaron Hernandez was a person of interest, but one of the witnesses at the last moment, for some reason, decided not to give their deposition. But Aaron Hernandez was... thought to be involved in this, that all got washed away.
Yeah.
So this stuff all happened, and they document pretty clear, like, okay, Aaron Hernandez was having a lot of issues in Gainesville. Urban Meyer, in the quote that they show from Real Sports, says, "Well, I just know when he went back up to Connecticut, we always had to watch out. I used to tell everybody, be careful when he goes back to Connecticut." Urban, what the hell are you talking about? Like, what the hell does Connecticut have to do with the crap that he was pulling on campus? Yeah, that was pretty weak by Urban Meyer.
It's a slap at Connecticut.
It's a slap at Connecticut.
My home state.
But it's also Urban Meyer acting like, hey, he was fine down here. He never, hey, look.
Dude.
He never got convicted of anything down here.
Dude, you're right. Really, he didn't? You're telling me a star football player didn't get convicted of anything in a small football town?
Hey, Urban, how about later on when he would go on to shoot his buddy in the face in Florida?
The state
of Florida was awful. But
the 15 other guys you had on that team that got arrested for stuff.
I think Aaron would have found trouble wherever he went.
Probably
he found
so.
Trouble in Gainesville. He may have shot somebody while he was in college at Gainesville, or shot at somebody. And I think likewise, it would have happened in other parts of the country.
Fair counterpoint.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us, and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.